Well, hey, I'm so glad you're here this weekend as we try to wrap up this series called Christmas Unplugged. And we've been in it the last few weeks. And if you're with us last week, let me just give you the quick 60-second summary. What we said is if you want to have peace this Christmas, it starts with peace with God. Remember this? We said you got to have peace with God first. And that can lead to peace with yourself. And then after that, you can actually have peace with others. So the kind of three types of peace that Scripture talks about. And last week, we kind of really honed in on these two, and I kind of left you on a cliff with this last one, peace with others. Like, what do you do with that at Christmas time? And that's what we're going to talk about today. And the way I want to talk about it is I really want to hone in on this word that's so loaded with emotion and so loaded with complexity. It's the word reconciliation. I mean, what does that even mean? I mean, if you were in the accounting world, you know, for something to reconcile means that all the numbers add up, everything balances, everything's made right. That's what it means to have reconciliation. But what about with that other person in your life? You know, if we're honest today, this is such a relevant topic for many of us because this week, as we approach Christmas, you're going to get around a table with somebody that you don't want to be there with. You don't. Or they're not at the table because this word does not describe your relationship. Or you're not going there because there is no reconciliation. And what we said last week is, isn't it interesting at Christmas that Christmas just seems to shine a spotlight on whatever that relationship is in your life? It's like the other times of the year you can kind of ignore it, but for some reason at Christmas, it just kind of magnifies everything. I told you last week that, you know, for the early years of my marriage, right after Jamie and I got married, my parents went through this pretty bad divorce. And so for a lot of the years early in our marriage, you know, my dad and I, we had this very tension-filled relationship. And as Christmas approached, it was just really interesting for me because I just kind of put it off the rest of the year. But man, when Christmas approached, it's like it became weightier. Any of you feel that way? I mean, for you, maybe as Christmas approaches, you know, maybe for you it is apparent that there is, you know, there's something there. You know the relationship's not right, or maybe it's a family member or a friend or a neighbor or a coworker that you work with. For some of you parents, it is a child. It is. And what happens around Christmas is if you have someone that you love or you care about in some way and there's something's not right between you, what happens at Christmas is you have to start doing all these mental gymnastics, don't you? I mean, you're like, well, do we send a gift? You know, do we go over there? Do we invite them over here? Do we not do anything? Do we call? Do we take their call? Do I take their call? I mean, if we got a gift, how much do we even spend? Ah, let's just send a card. But then you start picking out cards and you read the Christmas cards and it's like, Merry Christmas. Have the most wonderful year. You're the best. Like, I can't send that. This one says Merry Christmas. I'm not even sure I want them to have a Merry Christmas. Is there a card that just says Christmas that I can just sign? I mean, is there something like that? I mean, what do you do? You know, for a lot of us, especially us men, what do? You just push all that aside. You ignore it. And this time of year, it's pretty easy because, you know, it gets so stressful and busy that, you know, we can just work harder or pay attention to all the gifts we have to get or activities that are going on with the kids. And so we just kind of push it down. But then all of a sudden, Christmas starts approaching, and you can't push it down as much anymore, can you? And then, you know, when you're driving alone in your car, you're all alone. Well, you don't want to think about it then, so what do? You just crank up the Christmas music. Christmas music makes everything better. How many of you have your stations or your phone just kind of locked on Christmas music this time of year? Anybody there? Yeah, we love Christmas music. The problem is that a lot of the Christmas music we listen to deals with this as well. And you're like, well, it does? Yeah, it does. You just let the words pass right by you. We all do this. I was so struck by this past week of how much we can let the words of songs just blow right past us. What happened was our family got together to go see our grandpa who lives in an assisted living home, and the whole extended family got together. Grandkids came, and they brought their guitars because they were going to play some Christmas carols. And so they started singing these Christmas carols, and we all started singing along. And the second song they started singing was We Wish You a Merry Christmas. I mean, all of us know the words of this song. We've heard it. It goes like this. We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas. Wish you a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I mean, glad tidings we bring to you and your kin. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And as far as I knew, that was the whole song. And when they literally, but apparently there's a second verse, and when they got into the second verse, it was like I'd never heard it before. I sat there dumbfounded. They had the words in front of them. They just strummed right into the second verse and went like this. Oh, bring us some figgy pudding. I was like, are you kidding? What? I was looking around. I was like, oh, bring us some figgy pudding. Oh, no, seriously, bring us some figgy pudding and bring it right here. I was like, have I ever heard this before? How many of you have heard that line? You heard that line before? I was the only dumb one there. I literally leaned over to my aunt and I asked her exactly what almost all of you are thinking. What on earth is figgy pudding? What is that? I had to go home and look it up. Here's what it is. It's this. You should serve this Christmas. It is. It looks, I mean, I haven't had it, but it looks unbelievable. Okay, I guess it's this British, it has roots in Britain, how they celebrate Christmas, and they put dates and, you know, different things or figs in here, so it's called figgy pudding. Don't ever eat it, ever. It's terrible. But here's the point. You may have heard that so many times, and it just blew right by you, didn't it? You didn't know what figgy pudding was. You didn't even think about it. And this Christmas, whatever relationship it is with you that's broken in some way, at some point this Christmas, you're going to sing or you're going to listen to one of the most famous Christmas songs of all time. We actually sang it earlier in the service. The words may have gone right past you. Here's what it says. Peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled. Now, you know, you look at that and you're like, peace on earth and mercy mild. I don't even know what's that mean. But God and sinners reconciled, I know exactly what that means. I do because, you know, for me at the age of 10, when I was in church and I was explained to me that, hey, God sent Jesus, the story of Christmas, to come because we need to be made right with God again and have forgiveness. And it was explained to me at around the age of 10, and they were like, hey, when you accept Jesus and you follow him and you give your life to him, then, you know, you don't go to hell. And I was like, sign me up for that. And so, you know, at the age of 10, I got this. They didn't use this fancy word, reconciled, but that's basically what was being explained, is that, hey, God came, and that was kind of the message of Christmas. In the book of Colossians, the Apostle Paul, 20, some theologians believe 30 years after Jesus was crucified, he gives us a little glimpse into the Christmas story. He basically writes the Christmas story without using the word Christmas. Here's what the Apostle Paul says in Colossians chapter 1, starting in verse 19. He says this, for God was pleased. He was so pleased with you. He was so pleased with me. He was so pleased to have all of his fullness dwell in him. All of God's fullness dwell in who? In Jesus. It's like this is kind of the mystery of Christianity, isn't it? That at Christmas, God literally took all of himself and put his fullness, everything of himself, in Jesus, the person of Jesus. And then because of that, and through him, to, here's our word, reconcile to himself all things, whether things in earth or things in heaven, by making peace. See, the whole story of Christmas is this word, reconciliation. And if you ever wondered why, around the time of Christmas, that relationship gets spotlighted in your life or just feels a little weightier, you kind of maybe thought it was all the details you had to work out with seeing that person or not. No. Don't be confused. It's because everything about Christmas is about reconciliation. And so I would say this, and maybe you've never thought about this before. At Christmas, relational tension is magnified because I'm not experiencing the very thing that I'm celebrating, reconciliation. I mean, we sing about it. We sing, peace on earth and mercy mild. God and sinners reconciled. God, thank you so much at Christmas for reconciling with me, for forgiving me, sending Jesus. Maybe God's looking down at us and going, that's great, but what about you and others reconciled? No, God, you... Remember, it's you and me that are reconciled. God's going, you think I sent Jesus to reconcile with you just so you and I could be good? Not this way? Did you read anything that my son did here on earth? What he said? I mean, if you read the Gospels, Jesus said some of the most disturbing and unsettling things, especially about relationships. He said this once. Some religious elite came and asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus answered, the first and greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, to be reconciled with God. Everyone's nodding their heads. Yep. Then he went on. He said, but there's a second command that's just as equal. It's just as bound. In other words, these two commands you cannot separate. What was the second command? Love your neighbor as yourself. Wait a second. Are you saying that I can't be vertically right with God and be horizontally not right with people around me? Exactly. Jesus made it crystal clear. You cannot be vertically right with God and not be horizontally right with someone else in your life. To which some of you right now, you know what you're doing? You're pushing back hard in your mind. Because that person that's been popping in your mind since the beginning of the service that you know things are a little bit out of sorts. Well, this whole idea of reconciliation, that doesn't really apply to that situation. You and God have an airtight defense, right? I mean, you've presented this defense to God. I mean, let's think about this. In our defense, in my defense, right? I mean, for one, I mean, it was almost all their fault. Or it was all their fault. Or the second thing we'd say is, hey, they've never taken a legitimate first step. It was their fault, and they've never come back and taken a step towards reconciliation towards me. I mean, that divorce, that business deal that went bad, I mean, what that family member did, what they said about me, they've never come back and done anything to take a first step towards me. And hey, also, you know, it costs too much. They cannot repay or put the pieces back together. What they said, what they did, the emotional, the physical pain that they've caused in my life. I mean, for them to be able to repay, that would be the equivalent of the United States paying back all their $1 trillion of debt tomorrow. It's not going to happen. And besides, for some of us, I've already tried. Right? I've already tried. I mean, and they don't care. They won't reciprocate. In your life, have you had any of these four and kind of that broken relationship you've had? Of course you have. We all have. I mean, think about it. If you're married or dating, I mean, think about what happens every week or every month. I mean, come on, guys, right? It was always her fault. Guys, it was always her fault, right? I mean, she never told you you weren't supposed to leave your clothes on the ground. She never made that clear. You didn't know that. And, you know, she's never taken a first step. When she overreacted towards you because of that minor thing, she's never taken a first step to reconcile with you. And besides, she can't take back the words she said to you. She called you barbaric for leaving clothes on the ground. That hurts. And you've tried. You've told her she's wrong. You've tried. I mean, you cross-examined her. You brought witnesses in that confirmed. And she doesn't care. All joking aside, you think about these four. Which one of these is toughest for you? Can I tell you the one that's toughest for me? I mean, there's probably not a close second. It's this one, number two. If I feel like someone's wronged me and they're 51% at fault, of course they should take the first step. Why should I have to take the first step? Which one's hardest for you? Any one of these four can easily become our justification for not having to reconcile with somebody else. I mean, it's pretty clear cut. But if you've never understood at Christmas time why that relationship feels so weighty that's broken, let me explain it really, really clearly to you. This is so huge, especially if you're a Christian here today. The reason that Christmas shines such a spotlight on a broken relationship is because God had every single one of those excuses not to reconcile with us. Could it be? Could it be? In your life and mine, what if this Christmas I'm withholding the very thing I'm celebrating? I repeat that. What if I'm withholding from someone else the very thing I'm celebrating that God did for me? Here's what I wrote in my notes. I said, hey, deep down inside, what if we're thanking God for not holding us to a standard that we hold other people to? Let's go back and look at our defense, our defenses we have, right? Number one, it's almost all their fault. When God had to send Jesus to reconcile with us, because that's what he had to do, whose fault was it that he had to send Jesus to reconcile with us? If we were in a court of law and there were parties involved and it was God versus us, this was the court case, and we were going to assign percentage blame, here's what it looked like. 0% God, 100% us. It was all our fault. I mean, Romans 3:23 makes it clear, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. I love how that verse we looked at in Colossians, it goes on to say this. It says, once you were alienated. You ever felt alienated from God the same way you feel alienated from the other person? Once we were alienated from God. And we were enemies in your minds because of your evil behavior. You're like, whoa, what evil behavior? Yeah, remember? Remember that, remember your first semester in college? Remember that spring break you went on? Or remember how you treated them? Remember that girlfriend or that spouse? Remember your kids? See, since the history of humanity, we've given God an endless list of reasons not to reconcile with us. Let's be honest. You gave God an endless list of reasons not to reconcile with you. I gave God an endless list of reasons not to reconcile with me. I mean, I grew up in church. Do you realize I was almost born in a church? I was talking to my mom this last week. She was explaining to me, she reminded me that, she said, when I was pregnant with you, Ashley, the closing song, I stood up, and that's when my water broke with you. I mean, I was literally almost born, so I was raised in church. And listen, when I sinned, I knew the verses that addressed my sin already. Some of you had to come to church and realize that there's verses that say, oh, you shouldn't do that. Not me. I knew them already, and I still did it. But in spite of all of us, at some point in your life, you felt alienated from God. In spite of all that, here's what Colossians goes on to tell us. But now, something's changed. But now, he has reconciled you to Christ by Christ's physical body, the story of Christmas, and through his death to present you holy in his sight without blemish. And this is kind of like the drum roll of what we love about Christianity, free from accusation. Do you realize, like, if you're a Christian here today, this whole idea of what God did for us, we leverage it all year long. It's like there's this assumption that anytime we sin and we mess up and it's our fault, we can go to God and God forgives us. He re-reconciles with us. Yeah, like that business trip you took, you could come back and it's like God forgives you, or that thing you did, those lies you told. And this is so amazing how we just leverage this all year long. It's like every single time you pray for something, you pray for God to forgive you, you pray for a safe trip, you pray for God to protect your family, you assume that you and God are good, that there's been some sort of reconciliation. It's like if God came to you and he was sitting there talking to you and he says, hey, are we good? You'd be like, are you kidding me? Are we good? Of course we're good. I mean, you're God, right? I mean, and he'd be like, yeah, but are you good with him? Or are you good with her? God, that's different, remember? It was their fault. I'm so glad you don't hold me to the same standard when it's my fault. Thank you. What about our second defense? They've never taken a legitimate first step. They have not. The most amazing thing about Christmas to me is that God took the first step. I love how Romans 5:8 puts it, says this, but God demonstrates, remember this word, God demonstrates his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. While you were still a sinner, God sent Jesus. He did not wait for you to take the first step. I love how the Message translation puts it in verse 5, verse 6. It says this, but he didn't, and he doesn't wait. He doesn't wait on you to take a step for us to get ready. He presented himself for this sacrificial death when we were far too weak and rebellious to do anything to get ourselves ready. Could you imagine if God up in heaven sat there with his arms crossed looking down at us going, I'm not sending my son down there until you get your act together and take a first step. We'd still be waiting. And this point, I'm just telling you personally, this point haunts me when I've got something out of sorts with someone else in my life. Because I already told you, I don't feel like I should have to take the first step. And yet that's exactly what God did with me. It haunts me. For you parents out there, you get this. I mean, think about your kids. You know when your kids, they did something wrong and you tried to approach them and they ran off screaming and they went in their room and they slammed the door shut on you? Some of you have kids that are so strong-willed, they'd still be in that room today if you didn't come and knock. Some of you had to take the hinges off the door. I had a friend who did that. He had beads up for like years, took the door off. Why did you take the first step, even when it was their fault? One word, love. For God so loved the world that he sent Jesus for you. He took the first step. He always does. Yeah, Ashley, that's cool, but that example with the kids, I mean, that didn't cost me a whole lot. You don't understand the relationship that's been damaged between me and the other person. I mean, it's cost me years of just pain and suffering and financial ruin almost. I mean, come on. But I'd say this. You may never be more like Jesus than when you take the first step towards reconciliation with others. You may never be more like Jesus than when you take the first step. Yeah, but it costs too much. It does. It costs too much, and they can't repay it. Love how Colossians 1:19 goes on and puts it. It says this. Remember we read this earlier? It says, for God was so pleased to have his fullness dwell in him. Remember what he did? He reconciled himself. He sent Jesus to reconcile with us. And then the very next part of that sentence gives us a picture into what it costs God. What did it cost God? By making peace through an email, a letter, a plane ticket, a really awkward conversation. That's what it costs God to reconcile with us. Now, what did it cost God? By making peace through his blood shed on a cross. In Jesus' day, the most painful and humiliating way to die was to be crucified. You know, a lot of historians believe, unlike what we think sometimes when they crucified someone, they put them way up on a cross. A lot of historians believe that they put them just inches off the ground. And the reason why is because when people walked by, if they were just inches off the ground, they could look them face to face and spit in their face. That's how some of you feel. What they did, you feel like they spit in your face. And listen, God knows exactly how you feel. When God reconciled with us, he wasn't able to snap his fingers and remove all the pain that you caused. And just like if you tried to reconcile with someone else, you're not going to be able to snap your fingers and all the pain and all the damage just goes away. But listen, all it might take for you to reconcile with someone else this Christmas might be a letter. It might be an awkward phone conversation. It might be sitting down over coffee, as afraid as you might be, as fearful as that might be, as awkward. It's never intuitive. It will never cost you to reconcile with someone else what it costs God to reconcile with you. To which some of us are like, I get it. I get that, Ashley. I mean, I do. I know I need to reconcile with others. That makes complete sense. This is a really good message that you're giving today. Really good. Just doesn't apply to me. Because, hey, that person in my life, right? I've already tried. I already wrote the letter. I already made the phone call. and they didn't care. So Ashley, if I tried again this Christmas, I mean, this is what I'd think if I was in your shoes. If I tried again, they're not going to care. I know. They're not going to reciprocate. I know. But neither did you. How many times did God come running after you with his offer of reconciliation? Some of you left God in the rearview mirror for years, saying, not interested, I don't care, when he withheld his offer of reconciliation with you. Some of you, he chased after you for years. Some of you, he's still chasing after you. That's why you're here today. What I love about the story of Christmas, though, is that God never withdrew his offer of reconciliation just because we wouldn't receive it. I mean, think about it. When it comes to reconciliation, God could have said, I tried, they didn't care. Who cares? But God never withdraws his offer of reconciliation to you just because you wouldn't receive it. Why do we use the same standard with other people? So as December 25th approaches, here's what we're going to celebrate. Let's just be really clear. We celebrate that God came when we didn't deserve it. We celebrate that he took the first step when we never would have. We celebrate that it cost him more than we could ever repay, and he continues to offer it even when we refuse it. Even, you know what, for some of us, we went to church, and we signed on the dotted line. We went through confirmation. We're like, God, I accept it, and then we walked away. And then at age 25 or 35 or 55, when we came back, he still was there with the offer of reconciliation. That's what we celebrate at Christmas time. So here's what I want to propose to you today. This is kind of the whole message in one sentence. Why not demonstrate? Remember that word demonstrate? Why not demonstrate what we celebrate? If we're going to celebrate what God did for us this Christmas, why would we not demonstrate that to the other people in our lives, as hard as it might be, that brokenness that they've caused to us, in spite of all of our excuses? Can I get really practical with you? I'm going to give you some very practical things. Number one, if you're taking notes, why don't you make the first move? Some of you won't make the first move because you think it makes you look weak. It's the exact opposite. It makes you look strong. As a matter of fact, let me say this. The most mature person always makes the first move. Why don't you be the bigger person? Even if it was all their fault. That's tough to do, isn't it? It is for me. Second piece of advice I would give you is this, is handle with humility. You have to approach this with humility. I mean, think about how God approached us on Christmas. The way God sent Jesus, if I was God, I wouldn't have done it that way. You know what I would have done? I would have sent lightning bolts and made an earthquake. I would have got everyone's attention and been like, you heathens, look what I had to do. And that's how we like to approach other people. We come in fist blazing. Look what you did. That's not how God approached us. He sent a little baby on a simple night, and he was born in the equivalent of the worst Motel 6 with bed bugs. I mean, seriously, that's how God approached us, because he wanted us to know how much he loved us, and he approached us with humility. And if you truly want to try to reconcile with someone else, you have to approach it with humility. Third thing I'd say is this. This may be what some of you so need to hear today. Is just remember, you own the offer, not the result. Reconciliation is a two-way street. So when you know, in your mind, when you're like, okay, I'm going to do it, I'm going to write that letter, I'm going to have that conversation, you say all the right things, they agree with every single thing you say, and then there's total reconciliation, it's perfect. Music starts playing in the background. It may not happen that way, because you don't own full reconciliation, you own the offer, you don't own the result. But if you approach with humility and you make the first move, you're on a good path. So here's the takeaway today. Who do I need to reach out to before December 25th? Before December 25th, why would you let another Christmas come, feeling the weight and burden on Christmas morning, knowing there's a relationship that you know is not reconciled? There's a blank in your notes for a name that you already know exactly who it is. I put reach out. I almost put reconcile. But remember, you own the offer, not the result. You'd say, Ashley, but if I did that, I wouldn't even know where to start. I mean, if I was writing a letter or making a phone call, where would I start? Maybe you start the way Jesus started with us. Maybe you start with like, hey, I want to tell you I love you. I've been doing this long enough to know that, you know what some of you will do? You'll walk out, and some of you guys especially, because pride has a hold of your heart, you'll walk out and you'll say, eh. But for those of you, ladies that will move beyond your fear, for you men who will decide to be a man's man and to be a leader and take the first step, this could be the Christmas that changes everything. Something's got to change. The root of the word reconciliation in the Greek is that something's changed. Something has to change this Christmas. You can't go another Christmas with the same old baggage, carrying the same old stuff, and your family wonders why you get a little irritated on Christmas. Why would you let another Christmas go by? So here's kind of the bottom line. This Christmas, would you be so bold to demonstrate what you celebrate? Let's pray. Father, you know the conviction going on in the room right now. You know, as I wrote this message, you know the conviction in my heart. You know, there's people in my mind that I have to reach out to that I did even this week. God, you know that this Christmas, the reason that it's so tough is because we celebrate everything you did for us, God, that you came when it was all our fault, and you took the first move, and man, it cost you way more than it would ever cost us to reconcile, God, and you kept trying. So for those of us here today that know there's a name on our minds right now, would we not let December 25th, this next Sunday, pass by without making an offer of reconciliation? Write that letter, send that text, buy that plane ticket, have that conversation. Because God, as we do, we know it just might affect us and transform our hearts as much as it does anybody else. In Jesus' name, amen.